All right, good morning. Welcome back to another episode of Pre-Market Prep. It's Wednesday. It's a Fed day. Jerome Powell will take the podium at 2:30 p.m. Eastern. Probably going to have a lot of action, some fireworks then, market moving. But right now, it's the calm before the storm. We do have some big headlines to talk about. Of course, Chipotle stock split 50-1. Stock went to all new all-time highs last night. We will discuss that as well as some other movers. Let's go ahead and get the show started. Welcome to Benzinga's Pre-Market Prep.
This is a volatile puppy here.
It's all about execution styles and strategies.
All right, like I mentioned, market a little bit quiet this morning ahead of the Fed meeting. Let's go ahead and get some of those numbers. The S&P 500, SPY is up 0.08%. Basically flat, your Qs about the same, except for down 0.07%. Very flat there as well. Dow, which had the best day out of all the major indices yesterday, really led the way, closing up 0.8% yesterday. Trading slightly down this morning. The DIA is down 10 cents, but let's go ahead and bring Dennis in. Dennis, how are you doing this morning? There we go.
When we both have the power to add me to the stage and we both, you know, try to do it twice at the same time, this is what happens. Yeah. It's like, you know, when you're walking down, you know, the side of the street, and then, you know, you're going past the person, and then they go this way, and you go this way, and then they go this way, and you can't seem to get around that person.
Anyways, we figured it out. You're here now. That's what's important. mentioned it, pretty quiet this morning so far ahead of the Fed. I mean, what are you watching?
We're going to be watching for commentary. We know the Fed is not, you know, lowering interest rates here today. What we want to know is, was he paying attention to the data points? I'm sure they were last week. What is the commentary? They're still going to be data dependent. I don't think he's going to say anything just, you know, that's going to blast the market off here. And if the market doesn't price anything in, I'm somewhat concerned that he might just say, well, you know, if the data continues, you know, we may not go in May or June. And if he says something like that, the market will get hit. Maybe just stays the course. They're going to be data dependent and he's not going to say when they're going to go. So, you know, we can't read his mind. We don't have the briefcase indicator like we did back in the day with Alan Greenspan here, which is a joke. So I think we just kind of be cautious. I think traders are hedging themselves up ahead of this because I could see it going either way.
Yeah, I mean, like, I assume he's going to basically say what he's been saying, you know, data dependent. We've seen some evidence that inflation's coming down, but not to where we want it to be yet. And I mean, I don't think anything he says is going to be that groundbreaking or like shocking. But of course, it's the market. So we're going to have to make a stand and people are going to have to construe his words as either hawkish or dovish. And just based on price action heading into it, I mean, if we had been, if SPY had had this 5-10% correction or tech stocks were getting crushed, maybe he'd be a little bit more willing to sound dovish. But because we're, you know, basically at all-time highs, I mean, we're going to talk Bitcoin, but you saw Bitcoin get up to 73,000. Maybe all this price action leading into it, and especially after the hotter than expected, you know, PPI report last week. If I had to make a guess, and I have no clue, like this is just my prediction. Don't take anything by this. Like, I feel like he might lean a little bit more hawkish.
And I wouldn't be surprised at that either. I mean, we got the data that we recently got, and if they really are data dependent, is going to move them back to the, well, let's not take our foot off the gas pedal on, you know, where we've been. You know, we don't want inflation to creep back into this market. And it basically did last week from the two data points we got. That's a little creep back in. So I'm concerned with what he's going to say. I'm somewhat scared. Not saying we're going to, you know, just destroyed. But if he says anything about not going in May or June and starts talking about September, I think you see the TLT get hit on that. I think you see the IWM get hit on that. But again, we don't have a crystal ball. We don't know exactly what he's going to say. Maybe he doesn't want to spook the market, but I think he is more concerned about inflation and keeping asset prices elevated here. So I'm cautious going into this.
Right. And I mean, that's like, it's not like Powell's watching he probably is watching the market every day, but it's not like he's watching the SPY price and that's what he's determining what's going to impact them. But I think like somewhere in the back of his head, like you said, he's probably like, okay, well, I mean, we have some room up here, essentially. Like if the market has been getting crushed and people are worried about, their retirement portfolios and people in their homes and everything, then maybe he feels a little bit more pressure to sound dovish, but that's not the case right now. So again, just everything trending into this announcement makes me feel like he's got more room on the side to be a little hawkish again. That's just my prediction. I'm probably personally not even going to trade it based off that. Because I hope I'm wrong and I hope he says, everything's looking good. We can cut next, in a couple months and everything rallies. But someone in the chat was asking what will be the most volatile. I've got the IWM pulled up. I mean, if he sounds hawkish at all, you can see the IWM is down 0.3% this morning. So out of all the major indices, this one is the one that traders appear the most tentative on.
And again, we remember Super Micro because they haven't rebalanced the IWM yet. So Super Micro continues to throw that index out just a little bit because Super Micro and MSTR for that point, if we look at the IWM percentages, it's supposed to be equal weighted, but we know in certain quarters, stocks can move and then those weightings can get out. The top two components in the IWM are now Super Micro, which is 1.62%, and MicroStrategy, which is 0.63%. where the majority of the components in the IWM are supposed to, be a hell of a lot less. It's equal weighted. So usually what you see is, it's not small cap, but it's not equal weighted, but the 2,000 stocks in there. But usually you don't see one stock at 1.6%. So that will change once Super Micro Computer goes back to its normal percentage in the index.
Yeah, and you can see here in our Benzinga Pro, our why is it moving? Super Micro Computer shares are trading lower after the company priced a public offering of 2 million shares at $875 a share. Mm-hmm. SMCI has been one of the stories of the year, of course, going from 300 to 1,200. You can see from the chart here, looking at the daily, we did, come down from these highs pretty hard. But when we talked about this stock on its move up, I mean, we've seen some charts like this in the past couple of years, and typically, it might be like a meme rally or short squeeze or whatever it is, but we talked about how this one's a little bit different, that you have fundamental reasons. You've got, I don't give too much weight to analysts, but you got analysts coming in and backing up the move, raising price targets above 1,000, all this. So with that said, I mean, now that you have this huge retracement from 1250 down to 900, I think there might be a time where this thing gets interesting and it's not like, I just don't expect this, Dennis, to complete round trip and we're going to be looking at this back at $300 and saying, look how crazy that move is. I think it's just, the market is just trying to find its level, fair price for this right now.
It's a great point you're making. And, we always say, all the bubbles end badly and they do to a certain extent. This is a matter of how inflated that they get. But, to say this is, just driven, just on hype and, there's nothing to it is not the case. The NVIDIA and SMCI rallies were driven by fundamentals. It was an earnings explosion for these two companies. We rarely see that where you see a company increasing earnings. And I don't know what the NVIDIA numbers were, but it was, incredible year over year, 300-400%, increases here. We rarely see something like that. So this is why the stocks, this is why I've stayed long NVIDIA, but this is why these rallies are somewhat different. Are they sustainable? It's still to be determined. Maybe this, AI, was all pulled forward and the earnings are going to come down, but I don't think that's the case, especially for NVIDIA. Like, I'm fully out of SMCI. It was a great trade for, everyone who got into it. We had the NASA acronym. Stock went up from 300 to over $1,000 in the period that I owned it, and they're talking about 2 months. So it was a good run. I do think at a certain point in time, if we get some consolidation, start to hook up and look, maybe I'll re-enter this trade. But right now, I'm out, I've sold it, and, I'm looking at elsewhere. But, to the point of the markets here right now, when you get these secondary pricings, and we haven't talked about this for a while, often where they price those secondaries can act like a floor for the stock. And if we look at the super microcomputer overnight trading here, can you bring up that, you know, just overnight trading? We can talk about, you know, that, you know, they did price this last night. The price, it was 885. So, or sorry, 875. And we seemed to get down to that area earlier this morning, and we've bounced right out of there. So just knowing those prices, and when you've got a hot story, that a lot of times those prices can act like a floor for the stock, and that's what we saw in the overnight action.
Yeah, 100%. Well, we'll continue to watch SMCI. You know, I don't expect this, you know, story to be going away. And like I said, I'm not really anticipating this dropping back down to where it was before the big run up. But if it continues dropping, then I might, you know, get interested in it.
I think the 875 is a huge number for it now. I mean, overnight, I'm looking at the lows. I see 877. I don't know if I see anything lower than that. I see an 877.
I got 874 right here on this candle.
Oh, you do have 874. Okay.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to eyeball from the chart. Yeah. So you did see 874. So in any regard here, you can see clear support at the secondary pricing of 875. So keep that in mind if you're trading the stock today.
I do see some people talking in the chat about some commodities that are hot. First commodity I want to get to today, though, is burritos. You had Chipotle last night announce its first ever stock split, a 50-to-1 stock split. We're looking at the 5-minute chart here. You can see, you know, last night, right when the company made the announcement around, it was right after the close or
a little bit later. Yeah.
A little bit later, like 6 p.m. or something.
Yeah. I think it was in there somewhere.
And the stock popped. I mean, people like the stock splits. We've seen this in the past when company, you know, Tesla or other companies announce stock splits. It just gets interest going because now, you know, people will look at this and a 50-to-1 stock split from 3,000.
What is that?
Gets you down to $60. So $60 a share looks a lot more affordable. You know, like it doesn't change the actual price of the stock. And then some people, you know, like Warren Buffett isn't really a fan of stock splits. Obviously, you know, Burke is so
he big. Said that for all those years, and then he eventually did split Burke B anyway. So obviously, you know, he says, oh, it costs money. Why split your stocks? Never split Burke A, but he did split Burke B eventually. The reason you do stock splits is for the reasons that you've just said, is it feels like, you know, it's more, you know, an affordable stock. People say, oh, $3,000 stock. I'm not going to, you know, trade it or even be involved in it. It does get the retail crowd more interested. I mean, the retail crowd could come in and just buy one share, and maybe with fractional shares, it's not as big a deal. But I can tell you, liquidity for this will increase substantially. Like, you know, we look at it this morning, it's an 8-point wide spread. You know, two shares buy one share. The 100 lots are way back. The HFT is making a market 14 points wide. So it's, you know, once you go back down to $60, it's going to be more tradable. You know, I struggle. I do trade this every once in a while, but it's hard to even get. Like, even on this, you know, split news, there's just nothing in there. And the stock just, you know, goes up, you know, because there's just nothing in the book. So it's up 150 points. Typically, stock splits are worth 4, 5, 6% here. So it's kind of pricing where I think it should be.
Yeah, and I mean, especially with a company like Chipotle that has, you know, such a loyal, like, younger customer base, I feel like for a lot of younger people, now they'll see Chipotle stock and be like, oh, I go to Chipotle. I like Chipotle. Yeah, I'll buy that stock. It's only $60 versus looking at it. Like, if you're, you know, if you're my age, 25 years old, and you're looking at it and you're like, $3,000, I can't afford that stock. I'm going to go find other stocks. But now, you know, maybe, and I don't know, like, that's probably not why they did it, but that could help in the long run, is that you have like younger retail investors that already are customers of the company that might want to now buy the stock.
And now, and another great point from the chat, or chat is so smart, but just talking here, it makes Donk and Dave saying stocks was make options trading more attractive too. And for sure, because when you buy one contract, you've got exposure to 100 shares. Well, it's very difficult when you've got a stock like CMG that's $3,000 a share. I mean, now all of a sudden you come back and you get into $60 range. Now the options market lights up. So there's lots of reasons, you know, technical market structural reasons for stock splits. And this is, you know, a main point. So great point, Duncan, Dave.
All right. Well, we will continue looking at Chipotle, see how it's trading this morning. Again, it's up 5.5%. I don't know when exactly. Let's see if I go to my news tab, this split goes into effect, because
they were saying June, I believe. So we're ways out.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people will want to buy it as we get closer to that date because it does. I mean, like, you buy it at the current price, and then next thing you know, you got 50 shares in your portfolio. You buy one share, you get 50. That's a pretty good deal. I wish they had that deal at Chipotle where you buy one burrito, you get 50. Yeah. I actually had Chipotle last night before I even saw this news. I had it for dinner, and I was, like, eating my Chipotle when I saw the news. And I was like, oh, that's interesting. And there's a brand new one opening right next to our office downtown Detroit. So
I don't know. Are they in Canada? Because I never see one. Like, and, you know, obviously, you know, I travel to the States every once in a while, and I've had Chipotle a few times. Maybe that's a Siri question here, or even a, well, if we have our, you know, AI assistant there, we can ask. Is Chipotle in Canada?
Yeah,
I'm sure they must be.
I'm seeing some in Toronto, London, Ontario.
Yeah, Toronto. Is there anything else? Like, because, you know, I'm an hour and a half from Toronto. And there's none around me. Just interesting. Are they all in Toronto, all the major cities? Like, I'm looking, okay, there's only 26 locations in Ontario. And Ontario is a, you know, a province of 10 million people. So, you know, there's room for expansion here. They're all in the greater Toronto area. There is one in London, one in Ottawa. There's 15 in Toronto. Mississauga has three. Like, Mississauga, for instance, has three Chipotles, a city of over a million people. So probably room for expansion here, clear room for expansion in Canada. So Chipotle, we're giving you some business expansion there today. If you're listening,
Chipotle
execs, take it into Canada. I'll eat some Chipotle. I like some Mexican food.
Yeah, and last night I was like surprised. I got like this huge bowl. Like, they loaded it up. Like, I couldn't even finish it, so I got it in my fridge. Probably
like
gonna eat the rest of it today. And I got a bag of chips with it too to like dip the chips in it. And I don't think the guy rung me up for the chips because my total was $9.23, and I was like, I got like two meals for less than $10 in today's day and age, like with all this inflation.
Well, that sounds unbelievable. That's go to McDonald's and it's over $10 for one meal.
I know.
This is McDonald's.
Yeah. Well, I don't know how it works in Canada, but Dennis, if the hack with McDonald's, and I'll pull up the McDonald's chart just because we're talking about it, you got to use the app. The app like makes it, you can cut off like your price by so much using the app. They just have so many deals on there to
is
where
that what you got
to
do. The young generation really knows the deal. I was at the grocery store, and you know, I'm sitting there buying raspberries, and the guy beside me says, "Hey, you know, make sure you don't pay full price for those raspberries." And I'm like, "What do you mean?" Well, he's got the app for that compares all the grocery stores in the area. He's like, "This is on sale over at Food Basics." So, you know, you show this superstore and you get that. I was like, I never think about all that stuff.
That's
I just buy
much.
It. But
yeah,
I was like,
that's too much for me.
It's too much. But it saved me three. He just gave me a screenshot of it. He's like, I just show him the screenshot. It saved me $3 a pint of raspberries for the kids.
Good.
So I was like,
yeah,
oh, that's pretty good.
A price matching thing. Yeah.
Yeah. It's just so easy to do with all the apps.
And
like
I know,
that's where, you know, years ago you had to do the newspaper clippings, you know, go find it and then bring in the newspaper clippings. And it's fairly simple to do now with these apps, like Flip or something, I think that app's called.
I mean, I get this point that like McDonald's is probably, you know, harvesting my data through the app, but like, what do I care that McDonald's knows I like to order one McDouble, one McChicken, and a Coke? Like, how is that going to impact
that's
me?
That's good for you because yeah. It's good for you because you're going to get more of what you like. Maybe
yeah.
They'll create a product built for AB.
Or they know.
So
they
can... yeah, McDonald's, you can have my data.
Yeah, that's the key. You got to figure out which companies you don't mind having your data. Yeah. But the other thing that people do with the apps is like they'll like look at the apps to compare all the gas prices. And I've always thought that is silly because I'm like, what? Now you're going to drive 2 miles out of your way to go fill up because it's 2 cents cheaper on the gallon. Like you're going to end up spending more gas doing that. Speaking of gas, I mean, oil and I mean, I've seen gas prices up here coming back up, which that was one of the things for a while had been trending lower. And now it's back up to $3.50 a share. Let's go check out. I like looking
and
at
we know the Powell is probably watching that as well. It's the one input into CPI that we can clearly read, you know, and it's a major input here too. So as oil prices are ticking higher and gasoline prices are starting to tick higher here again, that probably makes Powell think, well, maybe we should stay, you know, and pause here on those rate cuts just for a little while longer. I personally think they're not cut until September. That's my own opinion, though.
Yeah, looking at here, let's go back to the national gas prices here. So looking at this table, a week ago, gas prices, the average was about $3.40. Now it's up to $3.50. A month ago, it was $3.27. A year ago, so for a while, year over year, gas prices were significantly cheaper than they had been last year. Now it's the opposite, where the current average is $3.50, slightly higher than it was a year ago. So that's been like one of the things I've been watching, just being like, okay, maybe, you know, the people saying that inflation is picking back up, maybe they're right. Cause at least in that one area that we can track very closely, to your point, Dennis, it's not crazy. It's not like we're back up to $4, but it's still, that's still extra money that is getting taken out of our pockets at the pump.
And just think about it. If, you know, if you're sitting here and, sorry, I just got filled in some stocks, so I lose my train of thought, but just, I don't even remember what were we talking about. I just got
gas prices.
Oh, gas prices. So, I mean, if you're sitting here and you're Powell and you start seeing gas prices tick up and you get those two inflation data points that were a tick higher last week, you're probably thinking, why am I going to hurry these rate cuts? Why am I going to come, you know, and cut today or cut on, and no, obviously not cut today, cut in May or cut in June? Why not just take a pause? Let's just see, you know, we'll let the higher rates work for longer here. The economy is fine. Jobs are fine. I think we're going in September, folks.
Yeah, and that will be, I mean, you'll hear a lot about the dot plot today and what, you know, what the dot plot looks like and how investors are pricing in those cuts. We did look at the CME Watch tool the other day. We can go ahead and pull that back up because today is the day. Next FOMC meeting is in 5 hours and 37 minutes. The clock is ticking here. You know, you can just have this page open all day if you want, but today's isn't really that, you know, there's not that much question about today's. You can see here 99% chance. But like you said, Dennis, we start going out to September. Now it's a crapshoot. Now you've got a 41% chance. So this, the CME's watch tool is still saying the most likely scenario is that in September, we are 50 basis points lower than we are right now. The current target rate is 525 to 550. They're saying 41.5% chance we'll be at 475 to 500. I don't know. I kind of disagree with that. I feel like the most likely is that in September, if we do get a rate cut, we'll be looking at just 0.25% lower. So right here.
I think so. I don't think we're going in the summer. I think it's going to be after the summer. I think it's going to be September too. And you know what? If the inflation continues to tick a little bit higher here, that can change as well. It's going to be very interesting commentary today. And that's why I think being long stocks, you know, just ahead of Powell here is a little bit dangerous here, because I don't think he's going to say anything to blast stocks off here today. And maybe we're wrong. We don't know. We don't have the full crystal ball. Maybe he's going to say, well, I'm not worried about those data points from last week. I'm not worried about oil going higher. I'm worried about keeping rates affordable for everyone here. And we're going to go, you know, next week, you know, or in May. No, he's not going to say that stuff. So,
and I mean, sorry, go ahead.
No, so I think we come right back to the scenario, the likely scenario that you said off the bat, data dependent. Well, the data showed tick higher. That means we're going to hold off on those cuts.
Yeah, and you have and exactly, it's all these things moving together into this announcement. Not only did we have hotter than expected inflation, but you also had the market, you know, two great days in a row, Monday and yesterday, bringing us back to right around all-time highs. You had Bitcoin and all these meme coins rallying, which again, that's not one of his dual mandates, is watching, you know, Bitcoin or even the market at all. But it's got to be somewhere in the back of his head being like, oh, man, like how did Bitcoin get back above seven, or how did Bitcoin break new all time highs with interest rates up here, all this stuff? So I just think with everything that we've seen, it's more likely. Of course, it's not to say that he can't come out and say maybe he does have some data points that show that even though last month's PPI was hotter, we feel very confident that next month is going lower. You know, who knows what he says? We don't know. But this is interesting here on the CME watch tool, looking at, we're currently looking at the September 18th meeting, the odds for it.
Yeah.
A month ago, it was, so the current rate is 525.50. So for the rates to remain unchanged from now until September, or in September, they're still going to be the same they are now. A month ago, it was giving it a 2% chance. Now it's giving it a 7.2% chance.
It's ticking higher.
It's still saying it's unlikely, but it's three times more likely now than it was a month ago that we will have the same rates in September that we do now. So these things are trending in that direction, toward the direction of no rate cuts. So I think it'd be kind of silly to go out there and be betting that Powell is going to say, yeah, we're going to be cutting rates when, you know, again, all the data is kind of indicating otherwise. Of course, like you said, Dennis, we don't know. We don't have the crystal ball. I'm just going off what we can see. And what I can see is, yeah, you know.
And what we can see also, Aaron, is the TLT has not sustained any type of rally at all. If rate cuts were imminent, you would start seeing it in the long-term rates. And TLT is sitting right down here at the critical 92 support level, clinging to it. And, you know, I'm long a little bit of TLT. I keep thinking long-term rates have peaked, but maybe I'm wrong. Maybe long-term rates are going to go lower. They have, you know, if it starts taking out 92, you start thinking, wow, long-term rates are, you know, or long-term rates might go higher. You know, maybe long-term rates do go higher if TLT, you know, takes out that 92.
Yeah, someone in the chat saying election season, they're going to cut rates before the election. There's probably some political pressure there, but I don't think it's like as... I don't think that's really what's on Powell's mind right now. And I think it's important to remember, Powell was a Trump nominee. It's not like he's got some like super hard allegiance to Joe Biden when he wasn't even, you know, a Biden appointee. But, you know, not we don't want to get too much into the politics. But
we'll stay away from politics. I'll rescue the show. Let's go to Bitcoin here, okay. Because there's been some incredible movement here in Bitcoin the last few days. Obviously, you know, we topped out there 4 or 5 days ago. Very much coinciding, you know, when NVIDIA didn't, not too far from its peak, not too far from the SMCI peak. All these risk assets tend to move together to a certain extent. It's risk on, we're going in the Bitcoins and the NVIDIAs and the AI trade, or it's risk off and we're going into more defensive stuff. I mean, it's been a risk off for the last 4 or 5 days. Since we got that inflation data points, it has been risk off here. Bitcoin obviously would like rates lower as well. Why? Because you don't get any yield holding Bitcoin. So there's an opportunity cost of 5 or 6% a year when you're holding Bitcoin. Obviously, if Bitcoin goes up 50, and you know the 5% you don't really care about. But in years it goes down, it's trailing with a 5% because you don't get any interest on your Bitcoin. I guess you know in some of these other accounts you can, but you know if I'm holding Bitcoin, I'm not getting paid interest on it. So here you look, Bitcoin's come off here from where was the high? 70? What did we get up to? 75? Aaron?
We got to 74. I want to say the top was going back. We're looking at a 5-minute chart here. I can pull it out, but we got right to 74,000. Let me see. Let's back up a little bit. Do a 1-hour chart here.
Yeah. So we're roughly $10,000 off the highs in 5 days. It's been a pretty serious sell-off. You can really see it in the MSTR chart, the leverage play on Bitcoin going from $1,800 down to $1,200 yesterday. It's just a quiet 30% fall in 3 days. So these things can have violent moves in both directions here. Does this mean the Bitcoin rally is over, the hodlers lose? I don't think so. I haven't sold any Bitcoin. I'm holding on. I still think we're going to see 100,000 on Bitcoin here. I would be a buyer of the pullback. I would wait maybe until you get that, you know, consolidation and then, you know, stop going down, not try to be a hero because we don't know when, you know, the pullback here. But I do think Bitcoin goes higher eventually here. Same thing with NVIDIA. I think NVIDIA goes higher eventually. So long term, I'm holding those. As a trade, I don't have positions in either.
Yeah, and you did have a pretty significant rally in Bitcoin from, it hit 60,000 yesterday. This might have been overnight, but 60,000 back up to 64. So yeah, if you're trading Bitcoin, you know, if you've been trading Bitcoin, you know what it is. It's volatile. And like you said, Dennis, MicroStrategy, even more volatile because it's the leverage play. They keep doubling down, buying more Bitcoin, borrowing money to buy Bitcoin. And at the end of the day, though, MicroStrategy's price cost basis for Bitcoin is around like $35,000 a coin. So you got to imagine they're sitting pretty now. But if Bitcoin drops or continues to drop, then MicroStrategy could be in some trouble here. But
well, it's the leverage play on Bitcoin, and MicroStrategy was in a lot of trouble. If we go back to where MicroStrategy was a year ago when the stock was $139, we were like, Michael Saylor has made a very leveraged bet, and he's wrong. You know, it looked like he was wrong. We got down to like 18,000 or wherever we got down to Bitcoin. He was significantly underwater, and it looked like the company could be in trouble while he just kept buying more and more and more, bringing those cost bases down. And obviously, you know, now, you know, he's, you know, looking like a hero for the leveraged Bitcoin plays. But that's what MSTR really is at this point in time. They have some other businesses, but for the most part, MicroStrategy is a leveraged Bitcoin play.
And PK is asking, how does MicroStrategy leverage it? It's because they borrow money to buy Bitcoin. So they're really buying more Bitcoin than like the money they currently have on its balance sheet. I don't think outside of that, it's like trading, you know, futures options or anything on Bitcoin. Although if I'm sure Michael Saylor would probably want to do that if he had the opportunity.
There's nobody more convicted in their opinion. You watch these interviews of Michael Saylor, and there is nobody more convicted in their opinion that this is the place where everybody is going to be. And you know what? He's been right for the last year here, and who's to say he's wrong? And I'm hodling along with him. So, Michael Saylor, I hope you're right.
Yeah, and I wonder, too, I mean, like, there's no, it kind of feels like there's no backing down, right? Like, if Michael Saylor comes out and says, oh, yeah, like, I think this next year is going to be tough for Bitcoin, so we're not going to buy any, like, Bitcoin would probably drop 15% or whatever. So, like, I feel like he's so invested in this now. He's, like, pot committed. If you play poker, he's pot committed, so he's just, like, that's all they have to do now is like buy Bitcoin on dips, because that's all MicroStrategy really is a Bitcoin holding company.
He's all in.
He's all in. Exactly.
He's like, all in. Kathy's all in on obviously her technology and disruptive technology. And Michael Saylor is all in on Bitcoin. Some people are all in. You know what? All in. The one thing about going all in is if you got a longer time horizon. I know Michael Saylor is not the youngest person in the world, but I mean, you can sometimes recover from these things. And sometimes going all in on bets when you're like 25 years old is a way to get rich. If you're trying to get rich, going all in is one way to do it. If you're trying to have a good life, I like diversification. I like being cautious. I've always been, you know, not trying to be the richest person in the world, but just trying to have a good life. So that's why I'm a little bit more cautious. I'll hold some Bitcoin, but, you know, I don't like stocks and Bitcoin getting up over 5% of my portfolio. Usually when that happens, I start to trim. NVIDIA and Bitcoin approaching 5% of my long-term holdings just because they've went up so much. And, you know, at a certain point in time, if they got to 6, 7, 8%, you start thinking, okay, well, they're starting to get too heavy. I like being diversified. But you know what? Michael Saylor, he's not 100%. He's 300% all in. He's borrowing money to buy this stuff. So I don't know if those are the numbers, but, yeah, you know, he's way all in. He's beyond all in. He's borrowing money to be more in.
That was Jeff Bezos's chat or point in the chat. He's saying he's more than all in. He's leveraged, so that's
yeah. I know he's more than all in.
He's more than
yeah,
all
exactly.
In. I mean, yeah. Hey, at least I mean, like you know, you got to give credit where credit's due. He has conviction, right? Like that's one of the big things is when you're convicted, you're convicted. I got ARK pulled up too because we mentioned Kathy, and I mean this is. It's got to be so disappointing for her that she really has missed out on this whole, you know, AI story and trade. I mean, because she's been talking about AI for 3+ years. I mean, that's like one of her, like, you know, pillars of technology of the future was, you know, gene editing, 3D printing, AI, all this stuff. And it's just, she just hasn't made any money.
She did it wrong. She bought the wrong stocks. I mean, this year. ARKK, let's pick on her again because she deserves it. This year, ARKK is down on the year. What the hell is going on? This has been the best AI year, you know, we've ever seen. And some of these companies are just unbelievable. And we know why, because it's Tesla, you know, is really holding her back here now. And Tesla's had a really rough year. But I mean, ARKK down on the year when you got the Qs trading up. What are the Qs up this year? 400 to 440. I mean,
9%.
We're talking about 9%. The Qs are up 9% on the year, and ARKK is amazingly down on the year again. So, you know, you're right. Like, she had the call, like AI and technology, disruptive technology, just bought the wrong stocks. She bought the wrong stocks.
Yeah, and I think she held NVIDIA and then sold it on its, like, when NVIDIA was getting crushed back in, like, 2022. So, again, I mean, like, I don't want to pick on her too hard because I know that feeling. I know the feeling of owning a stock because of the story, and then it goes down, then I trade it, and then I look back at it, and it's way higher than where it was. And I was like, oh, see, I was right. I just didn't trade it right. So being right.
I'll pick on her. I continue to pick on her. I've been picking on Kathy Wood all the way up. I was wrong all the way up and right all the way down. It was just, again, it's the structure, you know, buying companies, growth at all costs. And you know what? That worked well in 2020, 2021 when we were all in on everything and everything was just going great. While all these companies were in bubbles and she was still accumulating these companies in bubbles. And it's hurt her overall performance. What probably hurt her the most was that she had so many inflows, AB, coming in 2020 and 2021. And she had to put that money to work.
Yeah.
In essence, just raising her cost basis on all these companies she believed in. You know, if she wouldn't have had all those inflows, there's an argument that ARKK would probably be a lot higher. So she was a victim of her own success, just too many inflows. You know, she would buy a stock and go up 20%. Everybody was doing everything. Everybody wanted to invest with Kathy Wood. So, I mean, it was just that time where speculation was running rampant. And unfortunately for her, you know, she had to put this money to work, and she bought a lot of these companies at highs because of that. So a little bit of a victim of her own success.
That's a great point. Yeah, I mean, when it was going up, everyone wanted to give her more money. She had to put it to work while these things, they were going up. That's why they wanted to give her money, but they were going up, and she was buying the top on them. So let's move, you know.
Martha's in the background here. Which, the time has just creeped up on us, 8:35. Martha's been waiting patiently in the background. So let's go grab her.
Let's grab Martha Stokes. All right, Martha Stokes, CMT from Technitrader. How are you doing this morning? Welcome back to Benzinga's Pre-Market Prep.
Thanks. It's good to be here. It's always fun to work with you guys. So,
I see you got your charts. I'll go ahead and pop that up and let us know what you've been watching ahead of this Fed report today.
I really watch a different aspect because I'm from the professional side. So you're watching the retail side reactions, which is very important because a lot of your people are retail. But I'm looking to see what the buy side are doing and what's happening here. And what I see in the NASDAQ right now is a little bit of this rounding pattern. And this rounding pattern tells me that there's some rotation going out of some of the major heavily weighted NASDAQ index stocks right now. And that's interesting. I want to watch this and see how that works. But I thought it would be fun if you just picked a stock and asked me to see how I look at it and how I view it and what I read into it. Because for me, stock charts are like reading a book. I love this idea.
We're going to call it Ticker Time with Martha Stokes and chat. throw us out a whole bunch of tickers here, chat, for Martha. I'm going to give you the first one. It's NVIDIA because obviously everybody talks about it. So I want to get Martha Stokes' thoughts on NVDA.
NVDA has, it was a great buy down below, as you well know. Right now, it's trying to hold on to this. We're trying to see what I'm looking at is I'm seeing that the number of institutional holdings has dropped to 66. So there is some rotation happening as you see these little curving patterns that are occurring. What they want to do is they want to sell to rotate out to get into another stock that's going to grow and be exponential like NVIDIA. So they're holding a lot of it, and they will continue to hold a lot of it. But this number that drops, the percentage of shares held by institutions, is a critical number to watch, especially as we look toward earnings. What the institutions, what we're looking at, what we're trying to decide is, can they continue the exponential growth of their revenues and earnings moving forward? And we're going to be looking at a weekly chart, and we're saying, okay, nice solid support level here, no support level here. The institutions have purchased in this area with some rotation going on right now because they're a little concerned, but not a great concern. This is an angle of ascent that is unsustainable. So what this means is we've either got to have this stock move sideways and pattern out this. And that's the preferred method. If it could pattern out this, slow this down a little bit, absorb some of the speculation, because right now our fundamentals for the buy side are right down here. So this has exceeded the fundamentals significantly, and that's a concern. Also, the buy side is going to NVIDIA and the CEO, and they're going, you need to split your stock. We need to make sure that we can have smaller funds managers, retail groups, be able to afford the stock. Anytime you get a stock around $1,000, the buy side institutions are going to walk over to them and say, hey, we really need you to consider splitting your stock so that it keeps the activity going and the price moving upward. Because what they want, they don't want this to come down. They don't want that. They want to have that push. Small funds managers, retail groups, memes groups, people recommending stocks, all pushing it up. And there's a heavy, heavy push on the retail news right now. Oh, buy NVIDIA, it's a good bargain price. Well, it isn't, but they're really pushing it hard. Somebody is, I'm not sure who it is because I don't really follow that. If we look at the long-term trend of this stock, we can see that it has a cycle that is about 3 years and we're about a year and a half into it. So it could go higher, but this angle of ascent is too steep.
We need some consolidation to move higher at this point.
Yeah, it either needs a consolidator or it's going to correct down. And if it continues to move up with speculation, then we're looking at something in this range. It could fall that far. Or maybe right here. So what we have is dark pools were heavy into the stock buying right in this area. The selling down occurred, but they slowed the selling down, slow it down. Then they get to the low of their buy zone, and then they start buying and moving it up slowly, a little pro trader activity here, pro trader nudges going on in here, pushing this price up. Pro trader nudge here, pushing this price up. Pro trader nudge here, pushing this price up. And pro traders will continue to push it up as long as we can see buyers moving into this from the retail side and smaller funds. Those are the people who cause the speculation. The institutions are going to be buying low, and they've stopped buying here. There's some rotation because that's a lower number than it was a few weeks ago. So that's NVIDIA.
Multiple people, Martha, asking for Tesla. So we might as well do Tesla here too. I'm curious on your thoughts on Tesla as well, because if what has been great for NVIDIA has not been great for Tesla this year. It's been a really rough
year
for Tesla.
Well, Tesla has a problem in its CEO. And as I said, buy-side institutions have already gone there, sat down with the board of directors and say, get rid of him. And they are continuing to put that pressure on. What we have is we have some selling down. What we see is that there's only 43% shares of held by institutions. That means that the emotional and volatility of retail investors, retail traders, retail day traders, small funds managers actively trading their account are going to impact price. So what you see is the impact of price from those groups, small funds managers, 50,000, 100,000, they'll swing trade or day trade that. Retail day traders are scared money. They always have these funny little candles. They're scared to death. So they buy it because they're hoping it's going to go up because of some indicator they have or Fibonacci or whatever. But they're so scared they can't even hold it for any length of time. So they sell. So you have these little silly, very volatile intraday action going on. It is at a weak support level right now. It could drop all the way to here. We're having pressure from the institutions slowly selling. Their selling is very quiet, and they will strike a penny and then exit a little bit. But they're putting pressure on it. We can see it down here in that action. We can also see it here. We see how this volume bar, this is a price volume time indicator that tracks uptick versus downtick. What side of the market is the downtick? Is it the large lots or the small lots? And when we're talking large lots, we're talking 1 million shares of being sold. And what they do is they sell into the buyers. And so what we have here is a long, steady, slow tick, tick, tick of the TWAP price order type that's ticking this down and ticking this down. They're consistently selling out of Tesla, and they'll keep doing it until they get a new CEO in there. So what you're going to have with Tesla is a very volatile situation, because you no longer have the control of the buy side institutions who have 100 trillion assets under management to push it up, or they'll slowly, quietly exit it and keep exiting it. But all this volatility you have, that's all retail side. Smaller funds managers just dumping that stock. And on the weekly chart, we can see that there's very little support. Once it breaks through here, it can slide all the way down again. And on the monthly chart, we see a reverberating trough. It hasn't troughed properly. What this means is it lost its cycle. All businesses have cycles. And when the cycle breaks, that can be a disaster, and that price can drop even further. If we look at this low not being supportable, if it isn't supportable, this stock could fall all the way down to here. So they need to do something, and they need to do something quickly, because there are some serious problems in terms of the buy side institution's interest in holding this. Its cycle is very broken, and it isn't moving forward as it should. Technically, this is what we're looking at. Okay. How you retail side traders see it, how the small funds see it, when they start buying again, that's separate from this perspective. I'm just trying to give you the perspective that we have on it. Another one, if we have more time. I don't know how much time.
Well, we got time for a couple more, Martha. But just real quick, I was curious. You mentioned the institutional ownership of Tesla being around 45%, and that makes it more volatile when you have more retail, you know, investors that are going to be emotional. What is a like good institutional percentage? Like, what do you like to see in a stock?
Well, I only look at stocks that have 80% and up.
Wow.
Because the institutions have this huge army of people that go out and what they're right now, NASDAQ has a private market for private companies, and there's all these little private companies on it. And I'm watching that steadily, because once those go public, they have financed that company beyond venture capital. The buy side institutions have invested in the best of the best companies on that private market that you can't get into retail side, because they're private small companies, but they're the new generation of companies that will grow into big blue chips. Once they IPO, they already have their PSHI really high, and they're often profitable. So instead of an IPO that goes up because it's speculated and then crashes for a year and a half, and then you have to get into it, that thing is going to take off like an older company like Visa and others that have strong, stable revenues and earnings from the get-go. So it's going to stabilize and totally change the underwriting and IPOs of our next generation of stocks, because they're being nurtured in this private market and they're getting this investment early, which helps them build their market cap, which helps them get out of R&D and into market acceptance phase and market introduction phase, so that they can grow very much faster. It's an awesome thing that's going on in the background. So what they're doing is they're taking money out of some of these stocks that they know aren't going to perform well, and they're putting it into that private market in certain companies that show that strength. So instead of just relying on venture capital, they now have that $100 trillion in assets under management pushing these little companies faster. You're going to see an acceleration in new technology because they're getting more money when they need it most. So that's what I'm seeing behind the scenes. Do we have another stock to look at?
Yep. Let's grab Microsoft.
Yeah. Probably a little bit more institutional ownership in Microsoft.
That's what I'm curious too.
Like 71% is very good right now for Microsoft. Microsoft is also stabilizing itself. Microsoft has a brilliant new, well, not so new anymore, but I like the guy. He grew up in and was part of the technology areas. I like to look at new technologies. That's just my specialty, is being able to see the new technologies before they really come to market. It's stabilizing here. It's got some emotional trading going on by smaller funds managers. We can see the smaller funds managers. Whenever you see really long spikes in volume, these are either HFTs or memes groups or smaller funds. The dark pools are not going to show. They're going to have below average volume because they tick in a time weighted at average price over several days to several months. So when you see huge spikes in volumes, it's not the dark pools. But we have some really emotional activity going on, but it is stabilizing fairly well. I would really love to see this baby just hold here for a period of time. It can continue to move because it's got some really good solid technology. You can see that it's a little more stable on the weekly chart. Looks pretty good there. So that's a nice solid sideways patterning out any excessive price gain above fundamental values. We can say, okay, fundamental values were here. Definitely right there. Fundamental values were somewhere in here also. They dipped down and then they came right back up. When you have a price that reverses the next day after a dip down, that means there's a buy zone there and it reverses it because it's fallen below fundamentals. So that's a really good looking chart. I like to see the sideways, and it is starting to tip a little bit. This can be a higher high. It will definitely probably go that route, but this is going to tip down and tick down a little bit. The longer it shifts sideways, the stronger that base is going to be for the next run up. So we're not seeing the end of this cycle by any means. This is not an overextended pattern whatsoever. You can see in the 2000 era that it got way overextended and then spent a long time. But they have some really interesting new technologies coming forward. If it stays in its pattern and it moves sideways for a couple months or a quarter or another quarter, great, because that just builds strength there. It's only $421 compared to $1,000 or $3,000 or $6,000 stocks that we have out there right now. So it's pricey for a lot of people. They may split, but I don't think they'll split yet, because I think they're confident that there's growth potential going there. And what we want to see is it to continue to have quarter over quarter, folks. Year over year is not what the buy side looks at. Quarter over quarter. They want to see four quarters of consistent growth. When that starts to lag and revenues start to decline, but earnings are great, that's a warning sign. Earnings are not what you should be looking at. You should look at the comparative of revenues and earnings. They have to be in sync, because remember that our gap allows the CFO to adjust the expenses to improve earnings. So he can move expenses to the balance sheet as depreciable items or depreciable assets. And that makes earnings look great. So if revenues are declining or flat, that's a warning signal quarter over quarter. So you want to watch those quarter over quarter. You can go to NASDAQ.com. They have a great financials analysis on quarter over quarter. So you want to be studying that too, because that will tell you when this is peak. But definitely Microsoft doesn't look like a peak at all. It is in a correction mode sideways, which is excellent. And it should continue into its earnings season. And it reports 4/23. So 71 isn't bad. It's pretty stable for a lot of these companies that have been moving like exponentially.
All right, Martha. Well, it is 8:52. It's always a pleasure to get you on. The chat loves you here. We can't wait to have you back on in a couple weeks. Enjoy the rest of your Wednesday. If you want to check out more from Martha, we do have that QR code on the bottom of the screen. We also have the link in the description. Martha, thank you again.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Thanks, Martha.
All right, guys, we got about 8 minutes left of the show, and wow, we had a lot of tickers flying in the chat.
Yeah,
for Martha,
they've been chanting for PDD. It had earnings here, so I think we should probably start there, because this is your big earnings mover of the day. The stock has been very strong. It's been one of my best stocks of the month here. I've just been day trading it from the long side ahead of the report.
I can't keep
here
up with your portfolio, Dennis.
Well,
your trading portfolio, at least. I know your
my trading portfolio
is
changing constantly, but you know how I like to own stocks ahead of reports. So PDD, I've just been buying every dip, figuring that they might bring it up ahead of the report. They have absolutely in the last 7 days. This went from 110 to 130 ahead of the report. Well, the report, it explodes. I didn't hold it through the report. Thought about it, but I was like, I can't have the guts to hold them through the report here. I actually was selling. It was up last night again. I sold the rest of it last night. Wish I would have held some. It's up $22 here. So congrats to the longs here. Big pop here for PDD. What were the earnings like?
Earnings, let's go into that. Reports EPS of $2.40, beat by 75 cents. Revenue of $12.5 billion, beat by $1.7 billion. So this is, of course, the parent company that owns Temu in the United States, which is this like Chinese marketplace. You can get on there and buy stuff for really cheap. I'm not really a big fan of these companies long-term, Dennis. Like I don't know if you're familiar with Shein or Temu at all, but basically they're just like, they're like e-commerce platforms that you can buy really cheap Chinese made stuff on. Shein is like more clothes centric compared to Temu. But what people will do is they'll buy, you know, you can buy a whole outfit on Shein for like $10. It is like the most of fast fashion. And like apparently it's the material, the clothes aren't great quality, but they're so cheap and look good. So people will buy stuff from there. And I just think long term, you'll see like movement away from that stuff because it's like terrible for the environment, all this different stuff. But either way, Temu is doing great right now. And you can see that in the earnings. Stock is getting a pop, up 17% this morning. Looking at the daily chart here, been on a beautiful trend for the better part of 2 years now. You can see it trying to take out this 150 level. Looks like it might be some resistance, but if it can clear 150, which we're exactly at 150 right now, and then if you can take that out, then the trend looks like it can continue. All-time highs you're looking at back in 2021, looks like we're right around 200. So some clear psychological levels there in 150 and 200.
And you've outlined the resistance very well. Clear resistance from December and January up at 150, up to 153. So you're into the resistance area here. So it's hard to chase a stock up 22 points when it's opening right up into clear resistance. It's not necessarily a short though. So like sometimes it just blow right through it. You know, I often, equate it to, you know, you throw, a ball as hard as he can at a wall. Well, sometimes it'll go through the wall, sometimes it won't. Well, we're throwing that ball as hard as we possibly can at that 150 resistance right now because you're coming at it so hard. Does it bounce off of it and come back at you? Or do you throw it hard enough to get it through the wall? That's the question here on PDD to be answered here. So you're at 150. Can you know you get that ball through the wall here? I'm going to wait to see if it actually goes through the wall before I start to trade it.
Yeah, to my point, Kaylee in the chat saying trash with weird factory chemicals still in it, lead-coated jewelry, no thanks. Look at this news story. I'll pull it up real quick because I mentioned Shein, which I don't know if Shein's company or the parent company of Shein is publicly traded. Shein customer finds vial of human blood in package from FedEx. So like she ordered some dresses off Shein found this vial of blood. I mean, it just seems like you get what you pay for. So if you order a dress or a new suit off Shein, or
I don't think you could get blood in all these things. This is a ridiculous story, but
no, I'm not saying that's what. But I'm saying
bloody
that, like,
goods.
You're getting cheap, but you know you're getting cheap packages from China. Like it's not something that I would be, I'd rather buy some. I'd rather pay a little bit more for clothes.
I don't know. I don't buy anything on it, but I tell you, the stock's been a fantastic stock to trade ahead. We'll see how good it trades afterwards. You know, like we said, you know, you're coming into resistance. Let's see how it responds at the 150.
No, I know Shein isn't publicly traded, but I didn't know if like Temu's parent company is PDD. So I didn't know if Shein's in the similar camp. There's probably some, you know, like 10. I don't know. There's probably some.
I don't know who owns it.
I saw some people in the chat earlier talking about copper. Copper prices just hit 11-month highs, pulling up Southern Copper, ticker SCCO. I mean, this chart has been pretty strong. You can see here looking at the daily. I mean, we got down to around $45 a couple years ago, now back up to 100 all-time highs in Southern Copper. People do like to watch copper's price just from a commodity perspective because it's, you know, Dr. Copper. It can give you some insights into the health of the overall global economy because copper goes in to so many different industries,
everything.
You know, construction, now EVs, batteries, tech, electronics. You need it for, you know, building chips. Like everything uses copper. So when copper's doing well, it's usually a sign that the global economy is ticking. And when it's going down, it's usually a sign that people are a little scared. So I was looking through my history of Southern Copper. I bought it on June 9th, 2022, Dennis, for $62.
Oh, nice.
Sold it 4 days later for
$57. Ah! That's how we do them sometimes.
Yeah.
Risk management, and then it blasts off without you. Like, why did I ever sell?
Yeah.
And hindsight capital, it's 2020 all the time.
I've got the orders right here. 30 shares at $62.
Look at this. 9th,
June 13th. So I was like, oh, I was wrong on this trade. I was wrong. I pulled a Kathy Wood. I was wrong.
Is that Robin Hood?
Yeah, that is Robin Hood.
It's funny. Like I hear so much, you know, on Robin Hood. I've never even, you know, seen really the platform too much. So yeah, I've always traded on Interactive Brokers.
It's clean. I mean, like you would like pull up like
clean and easy.
Yeah. I mean, it's
still can't short stocks on Robin Hood, or can you?
Well, you can buy puts, but you can't short.
You can't short stock. Why don't they allow? They got to figure that out. You know, let's get some, you know, lending in there and, you know, figure out how to short stocks and get more people interested. They want me to move, so they're offering you 1% or whatever to move your account over and, you know, they give you an extra 1%. I see the advertisement all the time. And I'm like, I can't short stocks there.
There's a lockup. Like, there's a lockup period for that, though.
Oh, is there? The money's got to stay there for a long time.
Yeah, I think it's like a couple years.
It's hard to run a hedge fund when you can't short stocks. It's hard to run my own little hedge fund here, which I basically run, you know, being market neutral. It's hard to run a market neutral strategy when you can't short stocks. I mean, I guess you could buy the SQQQ and they get around it that way, but why not? You know, get in there. You know, you're huge here now. Get in there and start doing some lending. You know, lend some securities, short some stocks, get some real traders in there.
Someone's asking,
you're not real traders, but
get
some professionals that are shorting stocks in there as well.
Someone's asking, isn't shorts the same as puts? No, they're very different, but that'll be a conversation for another day because it is 9 a.m. Maybe we can talk about the difference of that tomorrow. But Dennis, 8:59.
Wow, it's just quick. Shorts, you have unlimited risk. Puts, you're just all you can do is obviously you're buying and then you're paying the premium to participate in the downside of the stock.
Boom. Now we don't need to touch on it tomorrow. Right there.
Exactly. We'll leave that one out.
All right. Well, Dennis, it is 8:59. You got any final thoughts for the day? I mean,
It's all about Powell, what he says today here. Again, keep an eye on the TLT. It's your lie detector test on these Fed days here. TLT starts tanking, eventually usually drags the IWM along with it. We know the NASDAQ can do its own thing sometimes. So the trade is usually, if he says something a little dovish, it's buy IWM. If he says something hawkish, it's sell IWM. That's the trade. Spies, diversified, Qs are tech, and it can do its own thing sometimes. So I think he's going to be more hawkish than dovish here today. It's just my guess. And even coming into it, the market somewhat thinks it too, because IWM, which had an okay day yesterday, is still significantly off from where it was 6 or 7 days ago here. So I think we're in a little cool off period for the markets, despite yesterday's rally, which was obviously driven, by a lot of tech stocks bouncing back. I think, we got to be cautious with his commentary here today.
Yep. And that was the point I was making earlier as well. But like we said, we have no crystal ball, so we don't know. All I know is we will be tuned in. We will be streaming that press conference at 2:30 here on Benzinga's YouTube channel. So make sure to stay tuned for that. We do have live trading starting up right now. This stream will redirect you there. Smash the like if you haven't already. And everybody, have a great day. We'll see you tomorrow morning. And Joel will be back tomorrow morning. I saw a lot of people in the chat asking for Joel. Joel will be back tomorrow morning, so you make sure you want to be there.
This guy, man, he's got the lifestyle. He gets a lot of vacations.
Hey, Dennis,
I need more vacations.
You can take a vacation coming up. I mean, once
I'm actually going to be taking a one-day vacation. I got one-day vacations when I go away, and that's coming in April. So,
all right. Well, good. All right, guys. Have a great day. We'll be back tomorrow morning.